So good morning again, and Happy New Year. Welcome back from your holidays, your wild reveries, or your quiet times, however you welcomed in the new year, 2015, unbelievable. I want to begin with a poem this morning, appropriately called New Year's Resolution by poet Philip Appleman. Well, I did it again. Bringing in that infant purity across the land, welcoming innocence with gin in New York, waiting up to help Chicago, Denver, LA, Fairbanks, Honolulu. I appreciated that. And now the high school bands are alienating Dallas, and girls in gold and tangerine have lost all touch with Pasadena, and young men with muscles and missing teeth are dreaming of personal fouls, and it's all beginning again just like those other Januaries in instant replay. But I've had enough of turning to look back, the old post-morteming of defeat. People I loved but didn't touch, friends I haven't seen for years, strangers who smiled but didn't speak. Failures, failures. No, I refuse to leave it at that, because somewhere, off camera, January is coming like Venus up from the murk of December, re-virginized, as innocent of loss as any dawn. Resolved. This year, I'm going to break my losing streak. I'm going to stay alert, reach out, speak when not spoken to, read the minds of people in the streets. I'm going to practice every day, stay in training, and be moderate in all things. All things but love. So I'm not really much of a resolution kind of person, actually. But I was thinking that I could get behind that last one. All things but love. And here we are, Epiphany. In the Christian calendar, Epiphany is marked by the wise men's arrival at the birthplace of the baby Jesus, as we heard earlier in the book of Matthew, the only one of the Gospels to record this particular event. The wise men follow the star, find the baby, deliver the gifts, and choose a different way home. It's a very small piece of the Jesus story. Not to be too heavy-handed with our gender-based roles, but I wondered if any of you had heard what might have happened if the wise men had been wise women. Three wise women, they say, would have asked directions, would have arrived on time, would have helped deliver the baby, brought practical gifts, cleaned the stable, made a casserole, and there would have been peace on earth. That's good, right? And joy, that's hashtag Jamie and Emma. So you can look it up on your new iPhone. Hashtag Jamie and Emma. Yeah. But back to the wise men for a minute. What, we wonder, does this story offer us? We who are pilgrims, for sure, in a constant mode of journey in the spiritual realm. Well, hopefully we are, anyway. We who are often less disposed to consider miracles, not least miracles that happen in scriptural verse. What does this Christmas myth offer us? How is it relevant to our lives? I read somewhere, and I really like the idea, that myth is not something that happened once and never happens again. Myth is something that happens over and over again. It's why so many stories continue to resonate for us in our lives, because when we take the time to parse them out, they have the potential to ring true for many of us. I was reading from Reverend Lillian Daniels' book, which is called When Spiritual But Not Religious Is Not Enough. Spiritual, when spiritual but not religious is not enough. Reverend Daniels is a UCC minister in a church where scriptural stories are visited and revisited regularly. I remember a family new to our church whose grade school age kids had only a year of Sunday school under their belts, she writes. In the middle of what was his second Christmas pageant rehearsal ever, the little boy cried out in total exasperation, "Do you mean to tell me that we are doing exactly the same story we did last year?" It's not a UU church necessarily, remember. We Unitarian Universalists are not necessarily regular revisitors to Bible stories. And yet I suspect sometimes it might do us good to have a little more practice in that regard. Religious imagination is an interesting and important muscle to flex and reminds us of what theologian Gordon Kaufman maintained, that religion is human imaginative construction. It is rich with possibility, and I suspect we might discover that it would help us out with the "be moderate in all things but love" regard. So let's catch up with our wise pilgrims for a minute. The team of three in our epiphany had gotten some kind of message, a star rising, the suggestion that an epic thing had happened that they should investigate. Get the camel, road trip. Let's go to Jerusalem and find out what's going on. They ask around, and word gets to King Herod that a prophecy has been spoken that talks about a different kind of king, a different king than he represents, perhaps. So Herod, who's kind of a suspicious character, being king and all, and wanting to maintain his control, calls the wise men in. Herod says, "Go ahead, follow the star, find the baby, but come back and let me know where he is." So we have three travelers, ostensibly of some means, and theoretically, you know, not born yesterday. They're smart. They figure out where the baby is. They pay a visit. They offer some gifts. And then, having had a dream, they make a kind of interesting decision. They decide not to return to the king, not to expose the baby's whereabouts to Herod, but to go home by another way. And that's the end of their role in this whole drama. And we never hear about them again. But one wonders, maybe, how their lives were changed by their decision to travel a different path home. We can imagine what they might have said to each other. "You know what? We don't have to play Herod's game. He's worried about his money. He's worried about his control. Maybe this baby is here to say there is another way. Let's not be a part of Herod's game. Let's give this baby a chance and find a different way home." Is that what they were thinking? I have no idea. But somehow we are led to understand that these wise men, who must have had busy lives of their own, right? Somehow we're led to understand that they are changed. They have been open to the idea of a revelation, responding to stars and dreams, and they change their course as a result. They become a part of a life and a story that they had not known before, and this baby's life becomes dependent on their choices. Moderate in all things but love. When was the last time any of you went stargazing? Or felt called somehow to a new way of being? When was the last time you offered your hand to another, scratched their back, even unbidden? I've been listening to an album lately by Peter Mayer. Sometimes songs get stuck in my head. Does that ever happen to you? I hear them over and over again. I started listening to this album when I was looking for some music for the Vesper services that we had in December. I didn't know Peter Mayer as an artist, especially other than having heard him sing "Everything is Holy Now," which Michael shared with us last spring at one of my candidating sermons. But I've come to find out that Peter Mayer actually was raised as an evangelical Christian, and a fair amount of his music is pretty, if not heavy-handed, clearly inspired by the Christian message. So the one that has been following me, in a good way, because we don't need to torture ourselves with bad music, do we? Is called Ever Walk With Me, Lord. I know, right? I'm not really a Lord kind of person exactly. For some of you, that word may truly be a word of comfort. And for others, it may be more of a challenge. To me, it feels like an especially dogmatic kind of word. It's more intimidating for me than the word God because it feels more anthropomorphic somehow. And I tend to think of mystery or the holy or awe and wonder in more expansive ways. I remember a woman I worked with in Weston who used to get excited whenever we finished a project together, and Millie would exclaim, "Well, PTL, we're done." And I thought, PTL? Praise the Lord. PTL. Work for her. So this song that's been sticking to me, and I've been trying to figure out why. Music, of course, is the great connector to all things emotional. Even without lyrics, music can take us to spiritual dimensions that sometimes we hardly imagined. Mozart was our morning transporter today. And I don't even know most of the lyrics to this song because I didn't look them up, and it's easy to get lyrics wrong, right? Somebody thought the Bee Gees' Stayin' Alive was steak and a knife. Steak and a knife. Or this is the dawning of the age of asparagus. Right? It's easy to get lyrics wrong. So I don't really know all the lyrics to this song, but the ones that stick with me as it's floating through my head are in the refrain. Turn this sadness into gladness. With kindness, the harmony, justice, the beat. You turned my footsteps to dancing. I thought, oh my gosh, are you kidding? Who wouldn't want that, right? To be perpetually dancing. To wake up with a little soft shoe. Have lunch with a little twirl. End the day with a little rumba. Would be good. Is it just the one word that gets in the way of this inspiration for me? Ever walk with me, Lord? Would I respond differently if the song was ever walk with me, love, or ever walk with me, awe? The reading that Stan offered us earlier is by a man called David Bumbaugh, who is a Unitarian Universalist minister, humanist minister. Long-time service to our association. Somewhere around 10 years ago, he offered into our collective debate the need for a new language of reverence. It was his opinion that religion is now a part of the entertainment industry, he said, and that in the process, it has been stripped of its power to stand in opposition to a world that is filled with injustice. Instead of religious communities standing in judgment on secular political power, religion has become a tool of political power. In Bumbaugh's opinion, using traditional religious language is to ask us to employ a tongue so corrupted and exploited that it is no longer useful. Do we need a new language of reverence? Yes, he said. The old language has been captured and enslaved. Still, he insists on the need to determine for ourselves and for our tradition what he calls the three central questions. What do we believe? Whom do we serve? And to whom or what are we accountable or responsible? Those are the questions he maintains with which every religious movement must wrestle. We pilgrims, we travelers, live in a complicated world. And we Unitarian Universalist pilgrims walk a particularly challenging path, it seems, because we have required ourselves to be open to so many possibilities that the road itself is sometimes not clear. And we have eschewed much of our historical religious references and stories, maybe because, as Bumbaugh states, they are no longer useful. They may seem somehow quaint or limited or antiquated or co-opted. But I hope and I want us to be willing to experience the epiphany that says, follow this star, or heed this music. The message that says, it will lead you home in a new way. It will change your footsteps to dancing. It will remind you to extend the gentle touch of your living hand to someone in need. I want us to be open to the spirit of that epiphany as we journey together and not let words deter us from how our hearts can be moved. If the word Lord can be mystery, wonder, and awe, if Lord can be compassion and light, soul replenishing and nurturing, dance instructing, justice seeking, and generous of spirit, then yes, ever walk with me, Lord. Let our hearts not be moderate in love. Amen.